Those of you who are joining us, we'll give a couple more minutes for people to join in case there's any technical difficulties, then we'll get started. Great. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on your time zone. Welcome to the Chip Design Hub solicitation webinar hosted by NSF. My name is Sharon Hu. I'm a program director in the CCF division of the SAIS Directorate, and I'm one of the Cognizant program directors for this Chip Design Hub solicitation. Now, before we jump into the discussions of the details of the solicitation, I'd like to introduce Dr. Delma De Silva, Acting Director of SAIS Directorate, to get us started. Delma.
Hi, Cheryl. Thank you very much. Hi, everyone. We are so pleased to have this opportunity to talk about this program with you. This program is special to us, to NSF, because it aligns with many of the NSF top priorities. So this is a program that strengthens our research infrastructure, which is, you know, an important priority at NSF. It also does it in a way that people will be able to leverage this infrastructure from many different places. So it aligns well with these opportunities everywhere that we pursue here. And finally, this is about semiconductors. So it is about enabling research and education that will further an important segment of emerging industries. So it's it is a pleasure for us to be able to have a programming size that across just checks so many of our priorities. Another thing that I really like about this program, it really came in response from what we heard from the community. So many of the program directors who developed this program have been talking to the community for years. There was a request for information a couple of years ago. There were at least a couple of workshops that were led by SAIS, CCF, CNS, the Computer Network Systems Division, or the Computer Communication Foundation Division. And in November, we had a convening here in Washington, D.C., with 150 people from a very broad spectrum of stakeholders. We had, you know, people from community colleges, from R1 universities, R2 universities, industry, startups and nonprofits and other governmental agencies. And it was great to see that they amplified the need for the design part of the infrastructure. Many of us have been talking about fab access, giving access to fabrication, and NSF has, you know, programs, supplements to help the PIs with that. And we all know that in the context of CHIPS, Department of Commerce, DARPA, many other agencies are setting up infrastructure for fab access. Here, this program addresses the need to have the design done before the fabrication. And providing this design is more than in this program, it's more than give access to the tools, the, for example, EDA tools. It is also about enabling sharing of best practices, know-how, training material. It's to really get the bar of entry to using those tools much lower for all the institutions. So we are very excited to see how this program will play out. And yes, we'll continue to support Fab Access. I would also remind people that there is a DCL from SAIS with the Mathematics and Physical Science Directorate and Engineering Directorate that we issued in August 22 that is still going. But we are hoping to see now the design space really flying. Finally, our work in the semiconductor space, in the infrastructure for semiconductor research and education space, is really aligned with what is going on in other agencies. So I do participate in monthly meetings with people from all the other agencies. We exchange information about our programs and build ways of future, going from one program to the other. So I know many of you are watching out what is happening in the whole chips space. And I want to say that we do understand that getting our NSF PI community fitting into those other programs is also a priority for us and for the program directors that you are going to meet here. So Sharon, this is it. I tried to be very brief so we can get to hear the details about the program because that's what people are here for. Thank you, Sharon.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Delma. And that's really set the tone for the next part of my presentation. So it is my great pleasure to start today's seminar with a presentation first. I will specifically discuss the objectives and the key requirements of the Chip Design Hub solicitation and what it covers and what it does not cover, as well as the specific evaluation criteria for this solicitation. Now my screen got freeze a little bit. Let me make sure. Okay, so now you're here. Please use the question and answer panel in the Zoom to submit your questions during and after the presentation. I and together with several of my colleagues here at NSF will answer them at the end. So the recording of the webinar will be posted after the seminar. Probably take a few days for us to get it posted. If due to time limit, we cannot answer all the questions, or if you still have questions after the webinar, so feel free to send questions to chip_hub@nsf.gov and we'll answer them. And please note that this webinar is not a substitute for the solicitation. So we just want to highlight some of the key points in the solicitation and clarify some questions you might have. For details, please refer to the solicitation. So now come to this, where does this whole solicitation come from? As we're all well aware that the chip design and fabrication have drawn lots of attention recently, and it's rightly so. And when we think about IC chip design fabrication infrastructures, like Delma also mentioned, we can typically think of them in two big components. On the design side, of course, electronic design tools or EDA tools at all levels, PDKs, IP licensing, distribution, support, as well as like FPGA prototyping, they are some of the key components. Now, on the fabrication side, then the infrastructure should cover all sorts of technologies, die testing, packaging, as well as post-silicon validation. Now, in order to understand the needs from the community related to these two types of infrastructures, again, like Delma said, NSF has organized a number of workshops covering research, education, workforce development, as well as comprehensive surveys. I list them there here. So if you're interested to find out more about what has been said, what has been voiced in these documents, you're free to check them out. Now, some of the key takeaways from these community voices include the need for design infrastructure that covers open access to the IC design ecosystem and also kind of design enablement for emerging technologies. And another recommendation is establishing partnership with EDA software vendors to fund licenses, especially for K-14 institutions, and making IC design as easy as software programming. Now, of course, what we are trying to address here is the Chip Design Hub. It's trying to mainly focus on this part of the infrastructure. I'm not going into the details of these the voices. I think lots of you are already very familiar with this. Now, I also want to make it clear that besides the design infrastructure, there's a critical need for fabrication infrastructure. And this would, again, aim to include access to leading edge and legacy CMOS technologies, as well as establishment of a national facility for prototyping emerging technology at scale. And of course, another goal is offering low to no cost chip tape out to students. Now, due to the limited funding, this Chip Design Hub solicitation does not address this need. Now, another takeaway is the need for packaging and testing infrastructure. For example, establishing regional or national facilities for remote chip testing and maybe multi-project packaging services. This particular solicitation covers this infrastructure needs on a very limited extent, right, which I will discuss a little later. So again, in response to this strong community voice, NSF has recently announced this brand new Chip Design Hub solicitation, and I'll go into details here, okay? Now the Chip Design Hub overall solicitation's aim is to drastically lower the barriers for students at all levels and academic researchers as well, in order for them to access state-of-the-art EDA tools, PDKs, and IP cores. Thus enable them to design and test their own IC chips. Now, a successful Chip Design Hub project will pave the way towards broadening participation in chip design beyond the limited number of institutions currently engaged in these activities. Now, specifically, the Chip Design Hub solicitation covers all the key components in the design side, which I have circled with red circle. Except the FPGA prototyping part. It also covers, you can see, the post-fabrication functional testing. Now, furthermore, another very important component should be the education and training support. And this is another key component in the solicitation. Now, let me go into some more details about the various components. Now, again, overall, this Chip Design Hub program focuses on providing cloud-based design infrastructure to universities, community colleges, et cetera. Now, on the EDA tool side, a successful project should provide access to end-to-end tool flow, complete with licensing and version requirements, as well as support to minimize the EDA tool bugs and errors, et cetera. Now, inclusion of EDA tools from both the multiple vendors and also open source tools is highly desirable. The tool suite should also include both front-end and back-end design and verification tools. Now, on the PDK and IP side, a successful project should provide, again, access to a variety of PDK and IP resources, and IP cores should be to be accessible, both the hard cores or soft cores, depending on the, of course, particular design requirement. Now, regarding the education and training side, a successful project should provide comprehensive training materials and design verification and test towards a successful tape-out targeting at different foundry processes. For example, the training modules may include the use of EDA tools, PDKs and IPs and chip integration, packaging bump designs, foundry cell integrations, you name it, like fabrication schedules, et cetera. It should also include other design issues, you know, training, for example, reliability considerations, electrostatic discharge protection, yield optimization, other set of nanometer design issues that are important to have a successful chip tape out. Now, the IC design resulting from the whole design flow that's offered, let's say, by a chip design hub, it should be in the form of mask layout tools, for example, GDS2, that's suitable for fabricating, for fabrication using various fabrication aggregation services. Now, while emerging technologies and the predictive PDKs and design kits are welcome, I should say the main focus should be on supporting access to tools, tool flows, and IPs and PDKs for fabrication on standard CMOS processes. Now, for post-fabrication support, such as the packaging, board design, testing, they are welcome. And for example, maybe in the form of tools, design guidelines, training materials, et cetera. Now, providing remote access to reduce the overall cost borne by students and researchers for testing is really highly desirable. Now, due to the funding level, the Chip Design Hub program will not support projects that include science and scientific and engineering research. Now, except the purpose of this research is for validation of the readiness of the proposed infrastructure. Now let's look at some of the solicitation mechanics and detail the requirements. For this solicitation, no letter of intent is required and no preliminary proposal submission is required. Deadline, of course, is April 4th, 2024, and the proposal should be submitted via research.gov or grants.gov. The anticipated award it will be in cooperative agreement, which is different from the standard or continuing grants, which lots of us are familiar with. Now, the details of cooperative agreement is beyond the scope of this particular webinar, but the high level idea is that this type of agreement will require more oversight from NSF. And once the award is given, then the agreement will work out between the university or between the institutions and the NSF. Now, the estimated number of awards will be 2, and the total anticipated funding is 10 million, and maximum size and duration of an award will be up to 1.6 million for 5 years. Now, please note that the estimated program budget, the number of awards, and the award size and duration are all subject to availability of funds. Now, speaking of eligibility, the PIs and co-PIs of a proposal must be either a tenured or tenure track position or a primary full-time paid appointment in a research and teaching position. Now, individuals at overseas branch campuses of US institution of higher education are not eligible. Now, individuals with primary appointments at for-profit non-academic organizations can serve as paid or unpaid senior personnel, but cannot be as PIs or co-PIs. An individual may appear as PI, co-PI, or senior personnel only on one proposal, but there's no limit on the number of proposals an organization can participate. Now, a single proposal should be submitted by the lead organization, so there's no collaborative proposals. And support should be provided to collaborating organizations via subawards managed again by the lead organization. Now, some of you may ask, why is this requirement? This requirement really to help ensure the end infrastructure is well integrated. So make sure to read the solicitation for more details about all these eligibility information. And you know, as always, non-compliant proposal will be returned without review. As always, refer to PAPPG Chapter 2D.2 for guidelines on the requirement of a full research proposal. Now, I would like to specifically point out that it's important to pay attention to the proposal preparation instructions provided in the program solicitation that deviates from the PAPPG instructions. I'd like to highlight a few of them here, especially related to the supplementary documents. This solicitation requires a collaboration plan up to 2 pages. The plan should include the specific roles of each and every participant across all organizations involved. And it should also include information on how the project will be managed across all the personnel on the project and as well as the institutions involved. And the plan should also include the specific coordination mechanisms that enable the cross-investigator, cross-institution, and cross-disciplinary type of scientific integration. Now, if a proposal involves industry partners, especially unpaid, a letter of collaboration is required. The letter should describe the plan for interactions, the time commitment of industrial partners, and the nature of the work. The total number of identified unfunded collaborators should not exceed 10. And this again to ensure that the team is at a reasonable size and can be well managed. Now, given this, the nature of the solicitation is to build infrastructure, and NSF recognizes that the collaboration is really critical. So we strongly encourage collaboration among multiple universities and industry. Now, for industry partners, we can see that they can contribute in a number of ways. I listed a few here, but of course, they are not limited to the following. For example, some of them could be EDA companies and could be foundry brokers and foundries themselves. And again, personnel from other type of nonprofit and for-profit organization can also be collaborators. Now, please note that the roles and the activities of every collaborator should be clearly described, you know, as I discussed in that previous slide. Now, besides the Euro intellectual merit and broader impact review criteria, like a typical proposal, this proposal review of the solicitation will also apply a set of solicitation specific criteria. So, they are included below here. And first, proposal should address how well does the proposed project will enable new research directions that were previously intractable, maybe infeasible or impractical prior to this project. It will also evaluate the proposals to see to what degree are education and the workforce development addressed in the project, and how will these activities strengthen the post-secondary education and lead towards a measurable positive impact on the semiconductor workforce. Other criteria include how broad the range of semiconductor-based systems are enabled, and particularly considering CMOS fabrication at different feature sizes. We'll also look at how robust are the plans for engaging the user community, the infrastructures for the community, right? How well are you going to engage the user community, especially to validate the impact of the project, and also for sustainability beyond the initial NSF investment. This will be, again, to how to support the chip design hub beyond the 5 years. The project will also be looked at, see how well or how robust are the plans for engaging with open source, academic and non-academic entities, including the tool vendors, fabrication facilities, PDK IP providers, and vendors that support end-to-end design flow. So these are the criteria specifically for this solicitation that we will instruct the reviewers to use to assess each of the submitted proposals. Now, again, there's more details on the solicitation, so please read the solicitation on these. Now, given that this infrastructure is meant to be broadly assessed and used, a cybersecurity plan is also required. This is not specific, this is not being treated as a supplementary material. This will be partially integrated into the overall proposal. So a successful proposal should really clearly describe the roles and responsibilities with respect to cybersecurity for the infrastructure, as well as how these security vulnerabilities will be assessed and addressed. I list a number of these factors here that should be considered and should be included in your discussion of the cybersecurity plan. But due to the time limit, I think I will not go over them in the greater detail. Now, in addition, proposers are asked to describe how the effectiveness of your proposed cybersecurity plan will be evaluated and assessed, and what approach will be taken to implement the proposed cybersecurity plan. Now, the proposal submitted in response to this solicitation will be reviewed by ad hoc reviews and a panel and or panel reviews. It could be a combined both ad hoc and panel review. Now, the review process will also include either site visit review or reverse site visit review. If you don't know what the reverse site review, that means we're inviting some of the PIs to come to NSF to present more details and to answer questions from the program directors. Now, as I mentioned earlier, awards will be made in the form of a cooperative agreement, and this NSF will have more oversight in terms of the post-award management. We'll also require that within the first 90 days of the award, a retreat of the awarded project key personnel organized by the award recipient to address the strategic planning of the chip design hub. And this is required, like I said, this is a required retreat and has to be organized by the awardees. And so your budget should include expenses for this specific retreat. Now, beyond that, NSF will also conduct site visit and or reverse site visit as part of the proposal evaluation process. This is on the when we consider subsequent reviews for the project performance in the subsequent years. Okay. Now, again, support for each year of the cooperative agreement of a funded project will be contingent upon, again, satisfactory annual review, maybe including these site reviews I mentioned above. So, of course, all funding is subject to availability. Now, this solicitation will be managed by a team of us, this including Dr. Sankar Basu, Dr. Daniela Zhao, and myself from CCF, Dr. Eric Brownmont, Daniel Andresen, and Dr. Jason Hallstrom from CNS, and also Dr. Raj Acharya from IIS, and Dr. Andrea Kanave from OAC. Some of us are present at today's seminar and also will join the question and answer session later. Now, if you have general or specific questions not answered in today's seminar, the best way is to email the chip_hub@nsf.gov. So as always, when you prepare a proposal, be sure to fully read the solicitation and be sure to read the PAPPGs, especially the relevant chapters I listed here. So with that, I kind of quickly zip through the highlights of this solicitation because we want to give more time for you guys to ask questions. So again, thank you for your attention, and we'll stop here, and then I will start let the question and answer part of this webinar. Now for this, my colleague, Jason Hallstrom, will lead the QA session. And my other colleagues, including Sankar, Basu, Raj Acharya, and Dan Andresen, they will all collectively help to answer any specific questions you may have. Again, like I said, we already received some questions before the start of the webinar, and we'll try to answer some of that and also start to answer some of your questions. With that, I will turn this over to Jason.
Thank you, Sharon. So I'm going to go ahead and share some questions and answers that we put together in advance of the webinar today. And Shankar is going to walk us through those while we take a look at the questions that have been submitted during the webinar. And so Shankar, I'm going to share my screen and the summary of questions and answers that we received. Hopefully everyone can see that okay. And I'll turn it to you, Shankar.
Sankar, you're muted.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, I thought Jason, you were going to answer the questions too.
So Shankar, I'm more than happy to do that. I was going to review the questions that were submitted during the webinar while you were walking through these.
Okay, all right, very good.
Thanks.
So I'm going to go through the list of questions here that we have received already in the ChipHub mailbox. There are sort of like 8 questions that we have so far. The question number one is, some of these questions actually came from multiple individuals, and it's kind of a summarized version of several questions. So the first question is, can an industry person serve as a senior personnel on multiple proposals? The answer is no. Individuals with primary appointments at for-profit or non-academic organizations can serve as paid or unpaid senior personnel, but that is not as PIs or co-PIs, but can only be on one proposal. For a for-profit non-academic organization, can participate in multiple proposals. I hope that's clear. Question number two is as follows. It says, are developing new or renovating existing design courses required educational components? So we take it that the intent behind this question is the renovating existing design courses. That's the question. That is what the question is about. The answer is largely yes and no. So course development activities, if included, should be closely related to the infrastructure establishment effort. So the goal of this solicitation is the infrastructure. Designing regular courses, as is often done in broader impact parts of proposals, is not what we are looking forward to unless it is closely intertwined with the infrastructure establishment activity itself. All right, question three, that has to do with startups. Question is, can startups use or benefit from the hub? The answer is, in the current solicitation, target users are students at various levels or academic researchers as well. Startups are not really targeted by these solicitations. For startups, a different licensing may be required or may be involved, and that's a question further down the road. So the answer is no immediately, but in the future, maybe. Question four. Question says, are the ORD universities required to provide IP and PDK licenses? The answer is no. The ORD universities are not required to provide licenses directly, but must provide infrastructure for or somehow facilitate securing such licenses, so they can serve as a middleman or something like that. Jason, next slide. Okay, question five, what is the ideal way for industry to be engaged? Now, this is a question that's been asked to us, but I think the onus is on the proposers to find the best way possible. Let me also say that we are also learning by interacting with the academic community. So we can give you some examples, like industry can be engaged in many different ways. One of them could be licensing, streamlining the process, free for academics would be nice, design flows, consulting, technical guidance, or training, train the trainer, so teacher education, if the industry folks and fab people from fabs can provide that sort of training to teachers or whoever in community colleges, that would be nice. There may be others, so it's up to the proposers to think creatively how they can get engaged with industry. Question six, do you see this project better led by a research faculty PI or some organizations like MOSIS? As you know, MOSIS is has not been very useful for the academic community in recent years, although we did do a fantastic job. Something happened in the slides. I did a fantastic job in the early years of VLSI, some 20, 30 years ago. But the answer is the project has to be led by a PI from an institution of higher education. Now, some universities have entities which are not the departments of electrical engineering and computer science, but they for proposal submission purposes, they operate in the same way as an academic department. They are qualified. So the entity, the university entity, has to be someone that that are eligible to submit proposals to NSF. Question seven, this hub solicitation will not directly support research, right? That was a question. The answer is very simple, correct. This solicitation is not meant to promote research, but somehow enable research for the future, broaden participation among the research community to take advantage of the infrastructure facilities. Question eight, what happens after the five-year program? So this was one of, this question was actually answered by Sharon, whose slides, but I'll repeat. The answer is indeed sustainability is an important consideration in proposal evaluation. Although at the current time, NSF has no specific plan or program targeting support of the research design, the chip design hub after 5 years. But this is not to say that after 5 years, we are going to shut down all of this activity and will not do anything anymore. It depends on how successful the program is. And that much of that depends on the community, the proposals we receive, the grant we fund, and all of that. If it's all successful, maybe NSF will think forward. But at this point of time, this particular solicitation is only for 5 years going forward. So PIs are encouraged to devise creative plans to sustain the chip design hub effort in collaboration with NSF so that we can support this beyond the five-year period. But the current plan is for 5 years only. Okay, so those are the questions that we had in advance. Jason, you have now live questions, perhaps?
We do. I have some live questions. And so we'll start working our way through the questions that have been submitted during the webinar. I will offer an initial cut at a first response and, of course, invite my colleagues to jump in at any time to add detail or make any corrections. So in no particular order, first question. Will the proposal need to explain how to set up a three-way license with EDA vendors and users? The expectation is that successful proposals will indeed describe how licensing will be managed to streamline licensing between vendors and users. And I'm going to cross these off as we go through them. Is the intent of the solicitation to broaden participation with new institutions or enhance existing locations? So the short answer is that we're hoping that this solicitation will achieve both of those goals, but the primary emphasis is on broadening participation across the enterprise. So the idea is that when we look nationally at the number of institutions that are involved in chip design, it's a relatively small number, and we would like to see that expanded across the country. Can we use LLMs for chip design, and can this be part of the initiative? There's certainly nothing in the solicitation that prohibits the use of LLMs, but I believe that this question is more of a research question. And to Shankar's earlier point, this solicitation is not designed to support directly fund new research activities. It is all about the construction of the infrastructure to support downstream research. Since there isn't really any high school curriculum on semiconductor theory, is there any room for that curriculum, or is the focus of this solicitation only focused on the tool flows and post-fabrication? The solicitation welcomes high school curriculum. It welcomes chip design curriculum, high school, undergraduate, and graduate, so that's certainly within scope. We do not take a hard position on which of those we prefer, so high school, undergrad, or graduate. There's a conflict between the number of awards, 2 and the ceiling amount of 8 and the total available budget of 10, which is only $5 million per award. How is NSF going to resolve this conflict? So absolutely, that is correct. It is not going to be possible for us to fund 2 at the highest ceiling amount. And so the awards will ultimately be based on the solicitation, rather on the response to the solicitation and the availability of funds. And it is certainly possible that we fund 1 at the full amount and that there is a complementary CHIP hub that would be funded at a reduced amount. What is the priority for course development in terms of education levels, i.e. higher, undergraduate, and high school? There isn't a hard priority that is established within the solicitation for this. Can a nonprofit representative of the open source hardware community serve on multiple proposals? The short answer is yes, if they are an unfunded collaborator, not a PI, not a co-PI, not senior personnel. So a collaborating industry partner who is not named on the proposal, that is not named as PI, co-PI, or senior personnel, may participate in multiple proposals. However, if an industry representative is named as PI, co-PI, or senior personnel, they can only be named on one such submission. Can you share plans on how to ensure sustainability after 5 years? So Shankar has touched upon this already, and so I'm going to dismiss this. We're looking for applicants to devise creative ways to support sustainability, with the understanding that there are certainly unknowns in terms of what NSF support might look like 5 years from now. I'm just working my way through some of the others. Does the prohibition on research mean that essentially graduate student researchers cannot be funded under this program? No, it does not mean that. So we would not fund graduate student researchers to be focused exclusively, for example, on new methods of chip design. That would be a research problem that would not be fundable through the solicitation. But we would certainly be happy to support graduate student researchers who are involved in the construction of the chip hub itself, or in the operation of the chip hub, or the development of associated curriculum and support. How is industry participation seen under this solicitation? If it is not funded, is this really cost share by industry and not allowed? So this would be fundamentally the same as any other industry collaboration on any other solicitation with an unfunded collaborator. So there is not a requirement within the solicitation that the industry partners provide, for example, provide infrastructure support. So we leave that to the applicants. So I may need help from my colleagues. I don't understand this question. Hopefully one of my colleagues will understand. Do open source projects looking for solicitation require flow support with commercial EDA tool vendors? Any of my colleagues like to take a crack at that one? Do open source projects looking for solicitation require flow support with commercial EDA tool vendors?
Sharon?
So if I understand the question correctly, this is basically talking about, can you have commercial EDA tool vendors to get working together with open source community to develop the design flows? If I understand that correctly, then I would say, yes, we definitely encourage that type of collaboration. Open source effort together with commercial EDA tools. I think that'll be a great way to address some of these access needs, right? So, but if I didn't understand the question correctly, please clarify.
Thanks, Sharon. Are the licensing costs paid to EDA companies assumed to be part of the budget? We certainly those are allowable costs that could be included within the budget, but we welcome applicants to devise creative ways to cover these licensing costs. So that could be included entirely through the CHIP Hub budget, or it could be a combination of CHIP Hub budget and perhaps a subscription or some type of streamlining process. So that we defer to applicants on that. Do you view open source EDA tools as critical to trusted microelectronics? Please share your priorities here. The CHIP Hub solicitation encourages solutions that will span both commercial proprietary tools and open source tools. I mean, ideally, we would see support for both flavors. Can you clarify your answer about developing courses? Increasing participation will likely require generating and sharing education materials that use the EDA tools. Is this in scope? Yes, absolutely. Developing educational materials to support the CHIP Hub is in scope for the solicitation. Are the two centers to be seen as duplicative or complementary? Complementary. Does this solicitation fund the cost of cloud computing for the place and route flows, which can be quite hefty? What about the cost of computing to write and validate RTL? Does the awardee cover it as well, or is it the responsibility of the user institution? So we have tried in developing the budget for the solicitation to look at anticipated costs for serving a large semiconductor community across the country. We believe that the budget ceiling we put together achieves this. With that said, we again defer to applicants to provide budgets that make sense for the solutions that they're proposing. So if there are cloud computing costs for particular workflows that exceed the available budget for the solicitation, we are looking to applicants to develop ways to offset those costs, again, potentially by passing some of those costs through to users of the CHIP Hub. Some of the workshops cited discussed problems with exclusively cloud-based design hub solutions. Are cloud-based solutions required? How do we scale and cover the cost of cloud computing? This budget may not be enough to cover it nationally. So I've touched on this to some degree already. We have, in our studies for this solicitation and the development of the solicitation, we have run cost studies to look at the cloud computing costs for running these workflows at national scales. We believe that the budget that's in place supports those at an appropriate level for a significant number of users. Again, however, if there are workflows that have costs that exceed what is available through the budget of this solicitation, we look to applicants to devise methods for covering those costs, potentially through subscription fees from user institutions. And I am going to need help from my colleagues on this. Are there specific incentives for open source EDA to expand their scope and funding for research and innovation within this solicitation?
I will try to take a stab at this. I would say that, again, like Jason and Sankara and I all point out, the focus of this solicitation is on infrastructure. If the open source EDA development is related to the infrastructure, to justify this is related to infrastructure for supporting broadening access, then that will be looked at very positively. If it is trying to solve specific open source EDA, like particular component or trying to develop new tools, that would not be a high priority.
Thank you, Sharon. Does a successful CHIP design hub need to include all three main aspects described in the program description, EDA tools, PDKs, IPs, and training? Or can it just focus on a subset of them, i.e. PDKs, IPs, and training? We're expecting a successful CHIP hub to support all three. Is there an expectation to pipeline towards tape out? The answer is yes. Are you expecting leverage from industry? I'm sorry, I'm not, if I could ask the submitter to rephrase that question. I'm not sure how to interpret it, but there is an expectation to pipeline towards tape out. Will the solicitation cover teacher training costs to scale EWD as part of the proposal? It's an interesting question. In full disclosure, I don't think this is one that we had anticipated. And again, I invite my colleagues to offer their comments on this as well. But if there was funding included within the budget to support teacher training, to scale out EWD relative to the goals of the CHIP Hub solicitation, that would be in scope for the solicitation as part of the EWD component. Does the cloud expense cover use of high performance computing, like running heavy duty simulations on GPUs? Yes, that would be allowable. Do you anticipate future solicitations that fund research using OpenEDA and PDKs? I don't know that we can comment on that at this stage. Do we expect co-funding from industry to perform tape-out? That is not an expectation of the solicitation. Invite my colleagues to help me with this one. What do you see as the key differentiators between this program and the proposed Design Enablement Gateway Technology Center within the NSTC? Or has there already been communication between NSF and the NSTC leaders for how to address the required synergy and or collaboration between these two emerging programs?
I'll take a stab and add in, and then maybe others can also help chip in. Delma has mentioned at the very beginning that at the high level, the director level, they have been having monthly meetings with the Department of Commerce, DOD, all efforts related to the CHIP and Science Act. Now, it is true that the NSTC has announced this design enablement gateway, but as far as we know, that's still in the development stage. I don't think there's a formal call for proposal came out. And I think we are in the discussion with them to see how we can leverage each other's efforts. So we hope to have more collaboration, and that's in the baking.
Thanks, Sharon. Is there an expectation that the open source EDA tools are heavily leveraged in the proposed hub and should be a significant focus of the proposal? We are hoping that successful applications will support both commercial tools and open source EDA tools. In terms of which is the primary focus, proprietary commercial or open source, we defer to applicants. So it's entirely possible, for example, that one CHIP Hub was funded focused primarily on commercial tools and another was focused primarily on open source tools. Of course, the hope is that there would be synergy between these two in the underlying infrastructure. How are sharing of resources supported? For example, for training resources, are there guidelines that collaborators must follow? There are no guidelines that are documented within the solicitation, and we defer to applicants to establish the most desirable mechanisms to support sharing of training resources. What kind of standards for infrastructure setup for sharing do you recommend? We defer to applicants on the best mechanisms to support sharing at scale. It is clear that the goal is broadening the number of institutions that can do chip design. Likely, this requires any new institution to get access to the licenses of one or more commercial EDA tools. Is the responsibility of a successful chip design hub to provide such access, or is the responsibility of a new institution to gain such access? We are expecting a successful chip hub to substantially streamline institutional access to EDA licensing for tools. It's possible that the chip hub provides a certain number, a capped number of licenses that are funded directly through the award budget. Of course, we understand that if the CHIP Hub scales out beyond what's supportable through the award ceiling, but it may be necessary to recover some additional costs from the institutions that use those EDA licenses. And we defer to applicants to describe that strategy in their application.
Jason, I could also add besides the cost a little bit on this question. Besides the cost, I think there's also in the intellectual property, the NDAs. So those we do, I think the best way is to get this, the participating university, not necessarily the hub, is responsible for the NDA signing, right? It has to be the institution that are going to use these tools should be responsible for the NDA signing between, say, the foundry and the or foundry or EDA tools and the institution.
Great, thank you, Sharon. Can training materials be developed outside the US to manage costs? There's nothing in the solicitation that prohibits training materials from being developed out of the United States, but there are restrictions mainly captured within the PAPPG for who may be funded under this solicitation as well as other NSF solicitations. If a successful chip design hub must include all three main aspects of the program description, can you give an example of how the two awarded centers might complement one another? So there are many possible examples. I'll offer two and of course invite colleagues. So one I touched upon already, the idea being that one chip hub could focus primarily on commercial tools and commercial design pathways, and a second hub could focus on open source pathways. Of course, there would be some overlap in the underlying training, but this would be one possible example. Another possible example, and there are many others, this is not intended to be prescriptive, is that the one chip hub would be funded on traditional CMOS, and a second hub could be focused on CMOS plus X, so potentially focus more on heterogeneous integration design flows and so on. Again, many other examples. So I'm going to read this question and give a very unsatisfying answer. A follow-up question regarding the available budget. What is the rationale for a ceiling of 8 million instead of 5 million if only 10 million is the available funding for this program? A $5 million ceiling would allow to fund two hubs at 5 million each, while the 8 million, 2 million combination seems to be far from optimal. The short answer is that this was the total available funding for this program. So that's the short answer. We, of course, NSF would love to have been able to put this on the street at a higher number to potentially support two chip hubs at 8 million each, but that wasn't possible. So the hope is that there will be two that are funded under this solicitation where there will be synergy, potentially synergy that is developed at the sort of the pre-award stage where there may be an opportunity for the NSF to help foster some teaming between applicants. The infrastructure should be more focused on conventional CMOS or CMOS plus X. Great question. We are open to both, so we're certainly open to both, but we are expecting to fund at least one chip hub under this solicitation that is focused on conventional CMOS. Will US-based foundries be given priority? That is a good question. That's not something that's touched upon within the solicitation. I invite my colleagues to offer their perspective on this, but this isn't covered in the solicitation. And on that basis, you should not assume a funding priority. All right. And Shankar, I'm going to ask for your help on this one. It relates to some of the past workshops that have been held in this space. Have we solicited EDA and or industry for the needs in this area? It's better to have the needs defined for the hubs to focus on.
The short answer is yes. There was a workshop precisely to address these questions 2 years ago. And it's actually one of the workshops that was listed in the slide that Sharon presented. So one will look it up there.
Thanks, Shankar. So the next question is the following. Moses used to provide subsidized instructional tapeouts for tapeout courses on older technology nodes. My understanding was the cost for these instructional tapeouts was in part supported by the NSF, at least in the beginning. I may have missed this, but is the idea that some of the funding through this solicitation is not meant to help subsidize instructional tapeout costs? In other words, universities will need to find other sources of funding to cover the costs of instructional tapeout fabrication. This hub focuses more on providing support to make these instructional tapeouts easier. It is certainly true that this solicitation focuses primarily on providing support to make these instructional tapeouts easier. However, there is nothing in the solicitation that prohibits you from including some funding to support instructional tapeouts. We would certainly not expect that to be the majority of the budget, but that would be an allowable cost as part of the EWD component of this solicitation. We have another tapeout question. I'm a bit confused about the tapeout expectation. The solicitation and earlier presentation mentioned that Foundry tapeout is not in scope of this solicitation. However, without a prototype shuttle, the chip design hub cannot guarantee the effectiveness or performance of the chips that are outcome of the hub. So what is the program's perspective here? If the awardee intends to perform prototype shuttle tapeouts under this project, is the solicitation in support of that? The short answer is yes. If the awardee intends to perform prototype shuttle tapeouts, that is certainly encouraged under this solicitation and you're allowed to budget appropriately.
To the previous question, I might also add that Dilma mentioned at the very beginning that there are other these DCLs which support tapeouts, and those are still active. And in addition to chip hub funding, one may also seek funding from those DCLs if necessary.
Thanks, Shankar. Who is ensuring this hub's effort is in synergy with the microelectronic commons hubs that were recently formed? How do we together avoid spinning of the similar wheels? So certainly the National Science Foundation is aware of the work that's happening in the context of the microelectronics commons. In terms of ensuring that there is not duplicative effort between the proposals that are submitted and the existing hubs that have been formed, the eight hubs that were formed late last year, again, we rely on our PI to ensure that the submissions that come in are not duplicative of the efforts under the NU. So, of course, we certainly encourage potential applicants to review the work that's already being done across the eight hubs that have been formed through the Microelectronics Commons funded under the DoD. Many technologies that can be readily fabricated in silicon are designated ECCN3991. Citizens from certain countries will not be able to access them. Is this a problem? This is an excellent question. Yes, absolutely. This is something that ought to be considered by PIs who are submitting to this program. Yes, indeed, this would have to be managed. Export controls would have to be appropriately documented and managed through a successful chip hub. How do you view advanced node flows versus traditional CMOS in terms of priorities? We will definitely fund a traditional CMOS chip hub under this solicitation. And if funding allows, we will focus on more advanced flows. And certainly more advanced flows can be included within a traditional CMOS chip hub application. And it looks like we have no further questions. So perhaps we can wait a couple minutes to see if any more come in. Can the National Science Foundation help community colleges or high schools to find local four-year institutions to join the design hub versus entirely decided by the institutions? I'm not entirely sure I understand the question. So certainly post-award, NSF will be happy to support advertising for the chip hub or chip hubs that are formed through the solicitation. It is the expectation of the NSF that the chip hubs formed under this solicitation would be broadly open to colleges and universities across the country. I'm not sure if I've answered that question, and invite the submitter to pose that again if I didn't answer it properly. Export control follow-up. I thought this is focused on US educational users. Yes, that's correct. Are you saying that we manage export control to foreign nationals as US institutions? Yes, if there are foreign nationals who would access this infrastructure from US institutions, it is absolutely the case that the export controls would apply in those circumstances, and we would expect the CHIP Hub to help manage or to help institutions manage those controls. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that the CHIP Hub administrators are managing that load by themselves, but we would expect the CHIP Hub to address how that would be managed, potentially by pushing that to the institutional users, to the institutions to sign off on who is allowed to access these tools and design flows. Again, the tape-out costs for prototyping by the users of the Hub are not assumed to be funded by the Hub's budget. They're not assumed to be funded, but you may include them within the budget. We would not expect the prototyping costs to reflect the majority of the CHIP Hub budget, but those are allowable costs under this solicitation.
Jason, so just to be clear, this prototyping has to focus on testing out the infrastructure, not for a new research idea, another AI accelerator type of thing.
Great, thank you, Sharon. I'm in a community college. How do I join the Hub? I'm afraid that we can't answer that today. So it depends on how these hubs are ultimately established post-award. We would, however, expect there to be an open and inclusive process for community colleges and other institutions of higher education to join the national CHIP hubs that are formed. Are there any restrictions or regulations in the use of generative AI for flows or training material? There are no restrictions documented in this solicitation in the use of generative AI for either of those purposes. We do want to emphasize, however, that the intent of this is to support infrastructure and associated services. It is not to directly support research. So if there is a potentially new generative AI-based approach for design flows that you want to explore under this solicitation, it would not be an appropriate venue for that. Along the same lines of the question on providing access to EDA tool licenses, is it the responsibility of a successful CHIP design hub to provide the new institutions with access to one or more fabs for fabricating the CHIP design tape out that the hub has enabled? That's a very interesting question. So we would expect the CHIP hub to point users to destinations for fabrication based on the IP and PDKs that the CHIP hub provides access to. I hope that answered the question. And Shankar, Sharon, I invite you to answer provide additional feedback here, but the question is, what kind of organizational alliances do you recommend, if at all? This is normally something that we would defer to applicants on the types of alliances that make the most sense for the particular hub that you're proposing. But again, invite my colleagues to offer any of their thoughts they may have on this.
I agree what you said, Jason.
Okay, great. So again, no additional questions at this time. We'll wait a couple of minutes to see if any more come in. Okay, I believe we've answered all of the questions, and Sharon, I'll turn it to you for closing remarks. Oh, no, I'm sorry. One came back. So this question has come in a couple of times, and I think we've answered it, but perhaps I'm not answering it as well as folks would like. So let me take another crack at this. So a follow-up question regarding the available budget. What is the rationale for a ceiling of 8 million instead of 5? and so on. So if only 10 million is available for the total budget. Again, the short answer is that this was the total funding that was available to support this program. We would love to have had a program where it was possible to fund two CHIP hubs each at 8 million, but that was not possible with the budget that's available. And so our hope by providing a budget that is above 8 million is that it may be possible for us to fund one CHIP hub, in some sense a primary hub, and perhaps a secondary hub or two complementary hubs of equal size. So I hope that answers the question.
I believe that the important thing to note here is that the two hubs, if we fund two, we don't necessarily have to fund two, may not be duplicative. So we are certainly not looking forward to funding two duplicative projects.
Can NSF require the lead applicant institution to prove it has been inclusive to open invitations to high school, community colleges, et cetera? I have seen closed invitations and most are not aware of such opportunity. It's an interesting question. The short answer is no. So the short answer is no. NSF cannot introduce that requirement now that the solicitation has already been posted. So the solicitation itself won't change. Likewise, we would not ordinarily expect PIs as part of the application process to document that they were inclusive in developing the team that developed the solicitation. I'm sorry, that developed the proposal response. However, we would expect a successful CHIP hub response, a proposal, to document the ways in which access to the CHIP hub and its supporting tools would be provided at national scale to a broad range of users, including community colleges, potentially high schools, and other institutions of higher education. I hope that answers the question.
Right, so I guess I could chip in a bit more if I understand the question. If you're trying to understand the question a little better, there's two phases. One is in the proposal preparation phase. In that phase, we, like Jason said, the solicitation does not require any PI or lead institutions has to ensure that they have an open process or they open their invitation to everybody who want to participate in the proposal stage. However, the proposal itself, after it's written, and it will be evaluated on how well it's going to engage the user community. So in that sense, that openness will be addressed in the proposal and also in the proposal evaluation process.
And perhaps just to add one more thought to that. Thank you, Sharon. So as Shankar mentioned earlier in the webinar, this will be managed as a cooperative agreement. So part of the reason that this program is going to be managed as a cooperative agreement, I should say awards to this program will be managed as cooperative agreements, is precisely for questions of this form. So we want to be sure that year to year that the CHIP Hub is meeting the goals of this program, that indeed it is providing access to a broad class of institutions and users. So if, hypothetically, if we had a CHIP Hub that was funded in 2 years into the program, we saw that only a certain class or group of institutions was receiving support through the hub, that's the kind of thing that we would seek to adjust through the cooperative agreement language.
Yes, that's an excellent point, Jason.
So Sharon, I don't think we have any additional questions, and so I will turn it to you for closing remarks. And of course, if anyone has questions following the webinar, don't hesitate to reach out to us. We'll get back to you as quickly as we can. I'll turn it to you. Thanks, Sharon.
Great. Yeah, thank you very much, Jason and Shankar and all of you, the PDs who were presenting here. I just want to point out that, again, I think, am I sharing the screen? Trying to bring up my... So just want to, again, thank you all for attending this webinar and also for your interest in this NSF CHIP Design Hub solicitation. And again, as I have repeatedly pointed out, that if you have questions that we haven't answered, you know, think of other questions later on, feel free to reach out to us via this email at chip_hub@nsf.gov. And also the webinar materials will be posted online. And also, you know, please help spread the words. People who are interested, who want to know more, you can help to help NSF to spread the words about the solicitation. And with that, I will say best wishes for your success and have a great day. Bye-bye.